Tamo, Mumano, Madule Tamo, Yogulokono, Madamasina. Masina, Madamasina. Masina, Madamasina. Suokono, Madule Tamo. Ulokono, Madule Tamo. Nunda madule tamu, Masina madu masina, ula njankole kia ula makanya, ulo kono madu letamu, suwa kono madu letamu, inyindunde madu letamu. Masina madu masina, masina madu masina, masina madu masina.
Thank you. That's the music of Lamin Conte from the Victor Ethnic Sound Series, part of our tour of Japan. Well, I don't know, maybe not a tour of Japan exactly. You've been listening to Radio Music Gallery on CKLN 88.1. Alan Davis with you, and Paul Hodge back in the engineer's seat. We'll return again next week at the same time. Good night.
Continuous period of 2 weeks, and he made remarkable progress. It's a new kind of
disciple one to guru one. Disciple one to guru one. Come in, guru. Can you hear me?
I might like to add that the kind of progress we witnessed in the Mike Dyer phenomenon took place over a year. That's the
we saw all kinds of solid fractions over the years. Well, just basically that I think what you're saying is pretty.
Yeah, that's right. It is hip. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, Mike, what do you think of the rave reviews my show's getting?
Your show, Bob?
Well, when's your show on?
Well, my show's on Thursday mornings.
Well, mine's on Wednesday at midnight.
Every other Wednesday at midnight, Bob.
Yeah, the Church of the Subgenius.
With Mike Dyer.
And J.R. Bob Dobbs. Mike, some more rave reviews?
Yes, sure, Bob.
This is a lot, but where does this take it? How does this help to get the under finance through the final backstage and out there?
That's
so
right. There's
no
way that my work is going to be stopped.
The thing is, I'm the greatest artist in life delivery. But I believe that this way, disciple will be looking for the completed intensive. Over and out.
They can't be familiarity. They can't be done on the radio.
The theme music.
Beam me up with a theme.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
Good night. Good evening, Doug. What the hell, Mike, Eddie, Bill? It's all right. It's
welcome
okay,
to another,
you know, I ain't in
stress yet. The Church of the Subgenius radio half hour plus a half hour.
Yeah, if we get the response.
Yeah. My name is Michael Dyer. Joining me again is J.R. Bob Dobbs, and nice to have you here.
Nice to be with you.
We broke precedent tonight, and you talked to me two hours before the show, on the phone. And we don't usually talk to one another on the day of the show. Any reason for calling tonight?
No, just for your personal reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, set up your personal background.
Yeah.
And it seems to have confused me since I already talked to you privately. I'm calling you the wrong name. You know, here on the Discarnate State, but
that's all right.
We can sweat it.
Okay. So, as usual, a theme will evolve from tonight's show unless we state a theme at the beginning, which we never do. A theme just evolves.
So, I guess since we said we never did, I'll give one out, right?
All right.
Okay. Let's see. I think one theme is, what the heck does Bob want? I mean, we get calls about all kinds of things, and we talk and address the questions and statements that are Subgenius Church participants request, but what the heck do I want to talk about? I mean, is it obvious what I want to talk about?
There seems to be a lot of confusion, a lot of callers over the last few weeks asking that very question, so perhaps appropriate that we deal
maybe
with
we,
tonight.
Yeah, should we discuss what Bob wants to talk about or carry on with a sympathetic, empathic, POMO kind of sensibility of...
POMO. Now, there's something that we haven't really talked about that might be a good theme, postmodernism.
No, I have talked about Croker and the postmoderns, but I didn't use POMO.
Yeah, but as a theme for a show, though.
No. I wouldn't think they're not big enough to be a theme.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to talk about is big enough. For example, I call them the holy offices, but I'm interested in... eventually, I'll deal with, you know, your private neuroses, but now... But eventually, I hope that you can get past your own private concerns and deal with the collective myth of Bob and what it contains and the accurate portrayal of that myth. And the definition and suggestion of that myth includes the commentary of Dr. Peter Beter, Babe Russell, Marshall McLuhan, Lennon LaRouche, Frank Zappa, Garrett Dean down in Nova Scotia, but it's pretty hard to have access to him. Who else? Herbert W. Armstrong, Worldwide Church of God, a mentor of Greg Evison, I understand. He cites privately that he's a very big influence on Greg. And who are some of the other sources? Cosmic Awareness, sometimes the Evergreens, we feature with Ken Perry. And well, that's enough. Anyways, for an example... Gorbachev said a week or so ago that, yes, in answer to questions in Paris, that he was baptized. Now, he's about 60 years old, so he was baptized in the 20s and 30s under Stalin. Were there Christians in Russia? Of course there were, but, you know, he kept it to himself. So if he was baptized back then he's part of that secret native Christian cult that Dr. Beter predicted when it took over Russia in 76-77. He predicted that 12 years ago. I think that's something worth talking about. I think events have passed enough that we can see that Beter was on to something that's happening. I mean, the world press is very confused about how to deal with Gorbachev, and whether he's a Russian or a Skopsy or, you know, a CIA agent or what is he, an alien. But the thing is that Beter described what he was years ago, and he's fulfilling that prediction by stating, yes, I am a Christian. Now, what's a Christian doing in Russia? Now, maybe we could use common sociological, POMO analysis that the Russian elite is having a problem containing their population, so they have to build up the nationalism, and you do that around a religious thought form, right? So maybe under, and this brings in the other holy office of McLuhan, since the electric environment is obsolescing the military bureaucracy and invoking the new trend to a religious bureaucracy or temple bureaucracy, then maybe the new form of sort of collective national phobic myth for public consumption of a nation is something religious. So maybe there's hoiking up this Christian myth as a fake. But let's talk about why Beter and how he knew that. That's one thing. That's one theme, and one was enough.
What else? That's an example of why I'd like to eventually have people give me some feedback on the Holy Offices, because that's the serious part of Bob's work. It was laid down by Bob Marshall, and then we had to move him out and put him into another level of communication. Now it's important to work with what Bob Dobbs has achieved since election to the Secret Council of Ten in March 1988, which brings up another point. George Bush announced 2 days ago that we will see an integrated world economic system in our lifetime, in his lifetime, in his generation's lifetime. That's something else that Dr. Beter dealt with, Lyndon LaRouche dealt with, Mae Brussels, maybe many other people. But what's it mean if we are going to have a worldwide integrated economic system with no divisions? Now, you can take the fact that a new book put out by Bruce Powers, reputed to be and have had worked with the CIA, a professor in Niagara University. He has dug out the old articles he did with Marshall McLuhan, expanded on them, and through Oxford, a prestigious press, has released for $40 hardback this puny little 200-page book, hardback, that you can get at the world's biggest bookstore, that says on page 118 that Spaceship Earth, using McLuhan talk in a simplified form, Spaceship Earth conditions, electric discarnate conditions, will mandate the world government situation that will come. So here's a guy, supposedly, according to my sources, worked for the CIA, taking a bunch of articles that he wrote with McLuhan in the late 70s for a few obscure journals, padded them up, and claimed, with Marshall McLuhan's name more prominent than his on the cover of this new Oxford release hardback, claims to use the importance of the resonance of McLuhan's name with the Global Village theme, which I've explained many times was not the main theme of Marshall McLuhan. It was the point of the Global Theater. Global Village was talked about by Bucky Fuller and those guys before Marshall. Marshall popularized it in the early phase, in the late 50s, early 60s, but he moved on to explaining the Global Theater situation. And if you look at the tetrad of the satellite in this book by Bruce Powers and McLuhan, you'll see that the fourth phase of the tetrad on satellite environment is programming the Earth. To program the Earth, you've got to have a world government. Now, you take that using of McLuhan's cliches posthumously by Bruce Powers. Right now, when Bush and these guys, since they got in, and Dr. Beter and my sources have maintained that Bush represents the Rockefeller group that's aligned with the Gorbachev group, they want to bring in world government because they have to, because Gorbachev runs the solar government. The Pentagon element through the early part of the 80s that Beter talked about resisted and caused a little bit of panic, but they are now moved to the side through Iran-Contragate. You look at what McLuhan is purported to have said in this book, and then you go back to what Marshall really wrote in 1972 in a book called Take Today, the Executive as Dropout. Take Today, the Executive as Dropout. He made this statement in the middle of the book. I don't have the page number. He said, "The future of government lies in the area of psychic ecology and can no longer be considered on a merely national or international basis." Now, this could be another theme tonight. How could you deal with government on the level of psychic ecology on neither a national or international basis? If you can't do it, manage it locally or nationally or internationally, how would you do it, Mike? What does it suggest? What's the third thing if you don't do it nationally or internationally?
Locally?
No, that would be, that's too tiny. Mm-hmm. You'd do it off the planet. A solar government.
Oh, I see.
You'd do it by satellite. You'd manage the psychic ecology, turn on and off the electric environment from a position off the planet. You couldn't do it with a world government or on an international basis. So you see, they're going to hoik up, the Rockefellers in the obsolete West is going to hoik up the world government mandate to save the Western world's face. And meanwhile, Gorbachev runs solar government. That's why he's happy to disarm. These are important themes, and this is part of my mandate, is to, you know, get people to attempt to think about it, and these are themes that should be talked about. But I don't think I'm going to talk about being serious for that long. Another theme is we ended off last week with, or 2 weeks ago, wonderful call from a woman, and I claimed I was a woman. And Mike can testify to this, that on a bad day, I look like Marilyn Monroe. But on a good day, I am Sophia Loren. Mm-hmm. And that's what I am here. I'd like to see...
I'll vote for that.
Yeah, I'd like to see how callers could feel that that is true despite the editing is done by the authorities in the Solar government or local basis that sort of tamper with our broadcasting here from CKLN, I'd like to see how could I prove that in this discarnate state? How could, what ideas, words, or thoughts could be evoked that would allow me to impart the fact that I am a woman, because I'm not going to be able to show it to you personally, because this church only communicates discarnately. In other words, you can only come down and see me personally if you come and be on the air. Then you could see if I'm a woman or not. But if you're not going to come down, then you have to believe me through the air, but I'm willing to take a test. So figure out how to test me to prove whether I'm a woman or not. Because we've been charged with being a boys' club, and I've certainly been against that mandate since we began, because I am a woman. And that's why I have the power today, because I'm perfectly in tune to the electric environment, which is right hemisphere, and we all know the female archetype is right hemisphere. Okay, Mike, the number for calls are what?
595-1478. Yeah, we. But you've. I think we should try to encapsulate.
Yeah. What did I talk about?
The focus, the theme for tonight.
Three themes. What was the?
No,
first?
No. It's got to. We've got to bring it into one.
Oh no. We don't. No. Anybody can make the one they want. Let's pick a theme.
But the point is, even if we make a theme, people don't respond to it anyway. But
that's right. Yeah. So say, what was the theme? Is Bob a woman? And should we talk about the holy offices? Is that important? Could we ever get to that point? And what was the other one? How do we have psychic ecology from solar government level? But to respond to immediate listener response, I have a letter here from David again. And he headlines this letter, Mixing and Matching with Bob, and he has in brackets, with a Gnostic bias. I accused him of having a Gnostic bias 2 weeks ago. Now, he's listened to me for a few weeks, and he's figured out the propaganda, the jargon, and this is his response. He says, the divine logos is a limitless universal life energy current that encircles the planet and interpenetrates all life forms. The discovery and utilization of electricity, he has discovery in quotes, is this same life energy expressed with limitations, quote, step down to meet material conditions by being relegated to wires. One thing about that is electricity doesn't travel through wires. That's the old visual metaphor of connections. Electricity is a relationship of resonance. All right, so I don't know if I would accept that statement, but anyways, he's making his point here. So we meet material conditions by being relegated to wires. That's what electricity does. For example, if you want to express music, you can have a more direct and human effect if the music is acoustic, free electricity, he calls it, rather than an impure, diluted, and deranged expression of the same musical idea. He asks, is the miming effect of electricity like a spiritual explosion in reverse? I left out a word there. Maybe I should just... rather than an impure, diluted, and deranged expression of the same musical idea electronically. His question is the miming effect of electricity like a spiritual explosion in reverse? And he goes on, my point is creativity and originality exist within the all-embracing life force. All recycled information and corporate media propaganda exists within the socio-political sphere of the electric environment. The divine logos supersedes the effect of electricity and offers a way for the mass cult man to find freedom for himself by tuning into the audible life force. This automatically turns off the express limitations of the electronic force in as much as you have a certain awareness of it and its effect on unknowing individuals, in brackets, the pinks. Basically, the ability to, or non-ability to line up with the force is relative for each person due to each person's relative placement of values, priorities, and attentions. Then he finishes off with a question, but maybe we'll get to that later. The first thing is, let's say his question. His question is, concluding question is, if the imaginative faculty is not embedded in any sensory operation or technological extension, how does imagination change when it is used to express its imaginings electronically? Now, he's suggesting that I'm pointing up and celebrating an inferior environment. Yeah, he might be right, you know, Mike. And if he's right... then does this show end?
It only begins with
Bob's,
of the evening.
Bob's repentance. Oh, wait a minute. Let me just address this. No, Dave, I'm going to explain that a little later. I can't admit that you're right. And I think I actually come up with some information to back up my my confidence that I should maintain a superior attitude here and explain why electricity is really part of the original logos you're talking about. I think you're missing the point. The original logos is electromagnetic resonating energy. Let's go on to the caller.
Okay, go ahead, caller.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Bob.
Hello.
I wanted to ask you a couple of questions.
No statements to make?
Well, I have a statement in the questions, of course.
This isn't Dave, is it?
No.
No, okay.
I wanted to ask one question concerning Marshall McLuhan's observation about the medium being the message.
Yeah.
My observation of that is that that means if you're holding an ice cream cone in your opposite hand, it tastes different.
If you're holding an ice cream cone in your opposite hand, it tastes different. Mike's laughing.
Is that not accurate?
No, that's... See, the medium for an ice cream cone is the mouth.
Pardon me?
The medium for the ice cream cone is the mouth.
Yes, but it's also... it also deals with atmospheres, isn't it? And your left hand or your right hand are different atmospheres.
No. The atmosphere is the environment around you. That's just a puny part of the natural environment, so I would suggest it might taste differently if you were inside a movie theater, or if you were watching television, or if you were at Disneyland, or if you were out in the Arizona desert. Those would be different environments that would affect the taste mechanism, not your hand.
I disagree. I think that you're creating or you're using a different environment, a different inner environment, when you're using your opposite hand. You're using a different part, tuning into a different part of your brain.
Yeah, but your brain is conditioned by the ensuing environment. That is a factor. Okay, I grant you that is a factor in relation to our natural brains, but the brain is changed by the environment. A right hemisphere electric environment will wake up the right hemisphere. A literate environment, a city 100 years ago, would wake up the left hemisphere, and that would alter your taste buds. So you're still missing the larger environment. I grant you that it does.
No, I'm not missing it. I'm just tuning into a certain observation that I've had. Of course, whatever environment you're in and whatever environment that's in and on has an effect as well. I mean, if you're in a movie theater with or without a Sony Walkman on, you know, I mean...
That changes you. Now, you are right in talking about the influence of your hands on your taste buds. We call that the user as content. And the user as content is a phenomenon, which Marshall explained in his book, Take Today, of the meaning or relationship of you to the larger total effects of all the environmental factors. So you're talking about your personal meaning influence via your personal...
I'm sorry, a streetcar just went by. I couldn't hear you.
What was the last word you heard? Do it again?
You were talking about his...
User as content, okay?
Yeah.
I was talking about user as content, and the meaning of that, which Marshall explains in the book Take Today, is the user as content provides his personal relationship to the medium, which is the meaning for that user in relation to the total environment of the medium. It's a personalizing of the total environmental effects. So when you talk about the effect of the hand on your brain, that is the user as content meaningful level of response, which is a factor in the total response, but it doesn't include the larger environmental, environmental atmospheric factor around you. So I would say you're emphasizing the user as content, which I would say also this letter that from Dave is emphasizing. See, we have a tendency to still think that the human factor, the private personal body, has a big influence, but it doesn't under discarnate conditions. It only has influence as an art form. That's why the sensory lords of America, Esalen Institute in the 60s, and the human potential movement human potential development movement that came up with it was based on sensory awareness, because our senses, our personal private sensory life, was so obsolete that it became useful and worked as a means of enhancing our perception in a recreational pastime as pastime way. But the reason that happened was the electric environment made all our senses obsolete, so we were free to play with them. So when you're talking about your body and your hands, that's a personal part of your sensory apparatus. That is not what I'm focusing on here and emphasizing the discarnate effect. See, you know, people took reality very personally over the last 30 years. And you have the different swingings of the pendulum and user as content group-wise and culturally responding to the electronic effect and various cultural movements. But they come and go pretty fast because they are not the constitutive ground of electric discarnatehood, which affects all cultures in totality. All right, now I don't want to sound too big, but that's what I'm trying to get at. It's a big process. So do you see, to emphasize your hands is not what I'm talking about?
I see that that's not what you're talking about.
Yeah, good. That's what I'm trying to communicate. And that level I'm trying to match, then I'm not talking about anything on a personal level here. And it's good that we have callers who begin to talk on a personal level, because then we can clarify what we're not talking about. See, for you, it's meaningful that you switched your hands. For the ice cream cone, that's part of your conscious perception of what the environment's doing to you. But I urge you to look at the larger effects, and it would change. Your different parts of your brain would respond differently to each hand with a quality determined by the larger environment, wherever you were, movie, restaurant, in a satellite, or in the desert.
Well, that is something that I understood through that observation of the switching of hands. I mean, it's I don't see it as a different thing. You know, I look at the larger environment and I see the same thing. I mean, it helped me tune into the larger environment.
By switching your hands, it helped you tune into the larger environment?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Now, that is the human cultural, personal, flipped response. We do it reverse. The electric environment triggers us to have an awareness of our own senses, but we think we have our sensory development initiated by our own will and notice the external environment. So it's a chicken and egg, which has the influence first kind of thing, right? So Marshall, when he said the medium is a massage, emphasized the external environment, especially targeting the Western audience, because the Western man, being literate up till recent times, didn't understand how the environment affected him directly. Remember, Marshall privately was a Catholic, a Roman Catholic, went to the Mass every day. That is something that surprised a lot of people who read his books but didn't know about that fact about him personally until after he died in 1980. That surprises people, because they thought of him as maybe an anarchist or a utopian or a conservative, this or that. They never thought he was someone who devoted his life personally to the Roman Catholic faith. And he would privately say the Roman Catholic faith was enhanced by the electric environment for him, because the electric environment for him looked like the Antichrist. But he didn't emphasize that collectively, because that just gets into a negative disservice emphasis, and he wanted to get people to look at the environment first with a sense of no value judgments, so that you could see at least the ground you were in before you had your personal user's content meaningful response to it. So I can't argue that for you, your perceptual apparatus sees that your hands have a bigger influence in perceiving the environment than the environment itself, or knowledge of it. Right?
Well, I begin with my senses, yes.
Yeah, but your senses have been extended.
Pardon me?
Your senses have been extended. The electric environment is an extension of your interior faculties. See, your senses aren't just limited to your body now.
I don't really see that. I see that that it is an experience of the senses. But it seems to be a second-hand experience. It's more like an echo.
Okay, look at it this way. Echo is a good word. That's what Joyce and Finnegan's Wake, which is another holy office, he called the electric environment echo land. But look at it this way. When you're on the phone, let's say you have ESP, and you can communicate with your brother in Vancouver, and you can do it anytime ESP. Now, with the electric environment, you could communicate with 100 people via intercom, you may not be able to communicate them to all of them with ESP, but maybe some of them, but you could communicate to all of them verbally through the electric intercom and get things done. So actually the electric environment is an extension beyond extrasensory perception.
Well, it's a different medium and a different message, though, right?
That's right. The medium, the message I'm saying it has is it's post-ESP. It's beyond ESP. That's why ESP would become popular now and become a natural thing for people to experience, because it's a rearview mirror, old response to a larger situation. When the larger situation appears and we can't stare that ugliness in the face, we then opt for rearview mirror activity, which, in the view of evolution, usually stimulates in the tetrad level something that was dropped a long time ago. So we brought back a passion for the occult in the 20th century because the electric environment predisposes that bias. That means we're having a renaissance in extrasensory activity right now. But it is content for the electric environment. That's the message of the medium of electric.
But I don't really see how you can say, I mean, if the medium is the message, if they are different messages, then how can you say that, for instance, the telephone is beyond ESP? I mean, you could never have communicated what you communicate on the telephone through ESP and vice versa. I mean, what you are going to communicate through ESP is an ESP message. I mean, you wouldn't be able to use a telephone for that message.
Right, but now think of it, since media are collective archetypes, think of how we apply that. You can have ESP and communicate in some form, but how does that translate into your external reality? With the electric environment, we can communicate with everybody, and it affects people and translates into activity. For example, inflation is caused by money moving at the speed of light. There's something concrete. The collective electric environment has created inflation. So ESP can be done, but maybe you could share thoughts, but how does it translate into an external reality that you work with? You know, how is it useful?
Well, it's very subtle. I mean, and you would really have to have ESP to understand how it's useful.
Well, I have ESP, and I have it all the time, and it's useful privately. But since Bob is a crowd, I'm a collective myth, and I'm talking about the holy offices who deal with the collective myth. That is the only thing to talk about collectively now. If you're going to get on the air, you have to talk about public issues. And I talk about the ground of the public and the grounds of many publics. So I'm talking about how to apply to that. For example, if the electric environment creates some kind of psychic stress, how do we have psychic ecology? That was my opening statement. Do you have it on a national or international or solar government basis? That is what's really affecting us. This is the cause of cancer and many diseases, and AIDS is the electric environment. It creates the ground for these things to happen. And that is how we have to learn to communicate on a collective level, not our private ESP. I mean, I am a great psychic personally, and I have people who can testify to that, but I don't bring it into this situation. I don't knock it, but it doesn't apply to this situation. It applies as content. Like, for example, now we're talking about your concern about ESP versus the electric environment. That's the content for the environment, but the hidden ground here is that we're both discarnate right now. You're being broadcast all over the Toronto area. Your presence is there and being picked up and worked on by people, and you're also picking up their pressures, the electronic pressures, in your localized place, wherever you're calling from. That's something that Freud and Jung haven't talked about. You know, what are the effects of that? So part of the Church of Slack is to join as many cults as possible to show that we accept any personal reality that someone has. But we're not talking personal reality. You know what I mean?
Persona being... being mask. I mean, you're talking about taking off the mask.
Good point. Now, yeah, I'm talking about the collective mask, taking off our collective masks. Our media and their environments they create are collective masks. And how do you expose and whistleblow those masks? One of the ways was done by Finnegan's Wake. In other words, he took the book, and the reason people find it hard to read Finnegan's Wake is that they think they have to read the many linguistic contental references. When on a simple basis, all that Joyce did was take the book and mirror visually the radio environment of the 20s and 30s. In other words, if you go up and down the dial of a radio, which you could do in Paris when he wrote that in the 20s and 30s, you would have a collage of languages coming at you. So he put that collage on the page. He didn't mean you had to know what every particular phrase from different languages meant. He wanted to show you via a visual painting or tapestry the effect of the electric environment in creating a discarnate collective mishmash. He wanted to show that through the visual medium so you could have a perspective on it. That is one way to throw and reveal the mask of the electric environment. So, yeah, I'm talking about the collective masks, the collective vortices of energy. Remember Wyndham Lewis, McLuhan's big influence, talked about the vortex. He had a group called the Vortices. So you're right. I'd be interested in why you brought up the mask, the point of the mask, because I wouldn't have thought that you would say that at that point.
Well, it's the way I've learned to understand personality as opposed to what is behind. What is behind it? I mean, personality is one's relationship to media.
Right. Now, you're still... Now, personality is okay, but remember, cultures have personalities, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you say personality, that's private, personal mass, psychological mass, but I'm talking about collective mass.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still talking on a smaller level than I am. I'm not being derogatory. I'm just saying you're talking about people. Under electric environment, there is no human image the way we have traditionally understood it in old cultures. There really is no human image, which means we're going to have a renaissance of all forms of old cultures and their values as an anti-environment to the discarnate, non-human situation we're in. Not that this non-human is antagonistic to us, but it is something new that we aren't prepared to cope with, I don't think. So I'm talking about the collective mass, and you used it and referred to a private mass, which is okay.
Well, what I've learned about the collective mass, I've learned through observing the collective mass within myself. I mean, there is, there is, in the microcosm, is the macrocosm.
Now, the microcosm, macrocosm is not what I'm talking about, because we've gone beyond that kind of dualism in the electric state. We actually have a situation where our normal understanding of God, he himself or she himself, is limited in dealing with the discarnate effect. So you're talking about you've learned it from understanding yourself, but you're forgetting that yourself now includes the whole world. You contain whole multitudes yourself in the discarnate state. You contain whole cultures. That's what yourself is now.
No, but even otherwise, I contain whole cultures.
Yeah, originally? On the level of soul or private citadel of consciousness, however far back that goes and however it manifested on cultures before we had speech or even ESP, yeah, that thing was involved and resonating with everything, all times. Now, I call that the private citadel of slack, and sometimes I'll mix that in, but I am trying to talk about something separate from that, something newer. In other words, I acknowledge, yeah, the private thing in yourself, but that is in the level of consciousness that is what I call the old nature. It's still here, but that was the God-given nature. So we were gods. Now we have created an environment, man has, that echoes that original God state. So it's confusing to relate our private awareness with our collective awareness, which is enhanced and confused among its extensions. Meaning the collective awareness and mass are extended themselves. See?
Well, quite often when I talk to you, I don't really feel that we're on the same wavelength.
But that's only from the point of view of matching. It's okay that we aren't on the same wavelength, because there are lots of people who are responding in the gap. The gap is where the action is, and getting all kinds of ideas from what we're trying to do when we're attempting to mix and match. So it's okay. You've been offering your language and your vision to stimulate activity corporately here.
Hmm.
I have a person right here who's been taking notes for 15 minutes based on what we're talking about. And it doesn't matter that what he says doesn't match with what you or I mean. We are a catalyst here. We're doing media alchemy.
Hmm.
I think we should possibly move on. I know there's some other callers, so.
Okay, yeah, so a caller, keep, you know, we can keep attempting to match, but you will maintain your ground, I'll maintain mine, and we'll just keep slinging away.
Create a magnetic field.
Right, we'll resonate. There's no violence intended.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks, caller. Bye. I recognize that voice. I hate, I'm not like, I can't do the CBC, you know. Well, thank you, caller. Time to move on. It's nice when someone calls. And
I remember the voice for several calls.
You two haven't quite connected, which is okay.
But I like the way he keeps trying.
Yeah. When, just listening to some of his comments, you know, we should, and going back to your original question or theme tonight, you know, what do people expect of Bob, and what do they expect Bob to say? You might want to reiterate some of the points of the Church of the Subgenius and, you know, what the Church has to offer, and ultimately what your goal is. You know, people have said to me, is Bob's, you know, goal, is it an evil goal or a good goal? What does Bob want? People often ask me that question.
So, yeah, in other words, I psychically knew that this was on. Mm-hmm. This is the accumulative effect of this program after 2 years, is what does Bob want? You know, Freud asked, what does woman want? Son Greg. And who are some of the other sources? Cosmic Awareness, sometimes The Evergreens, we feature with Ken Perry. And, well, that's enough. Anyways, for an example, Gorbachev said a week or so ago that, yes, in answer to questions in Paris, that he was baptized. Now, he's about 60 years old, so he was baptized in the 20s and 30s under Stalin. Were there Christians in Russia? Of course there were, but, you know, he kept it to himself. So if he was baptized back then he's part of that secret native Christian cult that Dr. Beter predicted would took over Russia in 76-77. He predicted that 12 years ago. I think that's something worth talking about. I think events have passed enough that we can see that Beter was onto something that's happening. I mean, the world press is very confused about how to deal with Gorbachev, and whether he's a Russian or a Skopsy or, you know, a CIA agent, or what is he, an alien? But the thing is that Beter described what he was years ago, and he's fulfilling that prediction by stating, yes, I am a Christian. Now, what's a Christian doing in Russia? Now, maybe we could use common sociological analysis that the Russian elite is having a problem containing their population, so they have to build up a nationalism, and you do that around a religious thought form, eh? So maybe under, and this brings in the other holy office of McLuhan, since the electric environment is obsolescing the military bureaucracy and invoking the new trend to a religious bureaucracy or a temple bureaucracy, then maybe the new form of sort of collective national phobic myth for public consumption of a nation is something religious. So maybe there's hoiking up this Christian myth as a fake. But let's talk about why Beter and how he knew that. That's one thing. That's one theme. And when that's enough. What else? That's an example of why I'd like to eventually have people give me some feedback on the holy offices, because that's the serious part of Bob's work. It was laid down by Bob Marshall, and then we had to move him out and put him into another level of communication. Now it's important to work with what Bob Dobbs has achieved since election to the Secret Council of Ten in March 1988, which brings up another point. George Bush announced 2 days ago that we will see an integrated world economic system in our lifetime, in his lifetime, in his generation's lifetime. That's something else that Dr. Beter dealt with, Lyndon LaRouche dealt with, Mae Brussels, maybe many other people. But what's it mean if we are going to have a worldwide integrated economic system with no divisions? Now, you can take the fact that a new book put out by Bruce Powers, reputed to be and have had worked with the CIA, a professor in Niagara University. He has dug out the old articles he did with Marshall McLuhan, expanded on them, and through Oxford, a prestigious press, has released for $40 hardback this puny little 200-page book, hardback, that you can get at the world's biggest bookstore, that says on page 118 that Spaceship Earth, using McLuhan talk in a simplified form, Spaceship Earth conditions, electric discarnate conditions, will mandate the world government situation that will come. So here is a guy, supposedly, according to my sources, worked for the CIA, taking a bunch of articles that he wrote with McLuhan in the late 70s for a few obscure journals, padded them up and claimed, with Marshall McLuhan's name more prominent than his on the cover of this new Oxford release hardback, claims to use the importance of the resonance of McLuhan's name with the Global Village theme, which I've explained many times, was not the main theme of Marshall McLuhan. It was the point of the Global Theater. Global Village was talked about by Bucky Fuller and those guys before Marshall. Marshall popularized it in the early phase, in the late 50s, early 60s, but he moved on to explaining the Global Theater situation. And if you look at the tetrad of the satellite in this book by Bruce Powers and McLuhan, you'll see that the fourth phase of the tetrad on satellite environment is programming the Earth. To program the Earth, you've got to have a world government. Now, you take that using of McLuhan's cliches posthumously by Bruce Powers. Right now, when Bush and these guys, since they got in, and Dr. Beter and my sources have maintained that Bush represents the Rockefeller group that's aligned with the Gorbachev group, they want to bring in world government because they have to, because Gorbachev runs the solar government. The Pentagon element through the early part of the 80s that Beter talked about resisted and caused a little bit of panic, but they are now moved to the side through Iran-Contragate. You look at what McLuhan is purported to have said in this book, and then you go back to what Marshall really wrote in 1972 in a book called Take Today, the Executive's Dropout. Take Today, the Executive's Dropout. He made this statement in the middle of the book. I don't have the page number. He said, "The future of government lies in the area of psychic ecology and can no longer be considered on a merely national or international basis." Now, this could be another theme tonight. How could you deal with government on the level of psychic ecology on neither a national or international basis? If you can't do it, manage it locally or nationally or internationally, how would you do it, Mike? What does it suggest? What's the third thing if you don't do it nationally or internationally?
Locally?
No, that would be, that's too tiny. Mm-hmm. You'd do it off the planet. A solar government.
Oh, I see.
You'd do it by satellite. You'd manage the psychic ecology, turn on and off the electric environment from a position off the planet. You couldn't do it with a world government or on an international basis. So you see, they're going to hoike up. The Rockefellers in the obsolete West is going to hoike up the world government mandate to save the Western world's face. And meanwhile, Gorbachev runs solar government. That's why he's happy to disarm. These are important themes, and this is part of my mandate, is to, you know, get people to attempt to think about it, and these are themes that should be talked about. But I don't think I'm going to talk about being serious for that long. Another theme is we ended off last week with, or 2 weeks ago, wonderful call from a woman, and I claimed I was a woman. And Mike can testify to this, that on a bad day, I look like Marilyn Monroe. But on a good day, I am Sophia Loren. Mm-hmm. And that's what I am here. I'd like to see...
I'll vouch for that.
Yeah, I'd like to see how callers could feel that that is true, despite the editing as done by the authorities in the solar government or local basis that sort of tamper with our broadcasting here from CKLN. I'd like to see how could I prove that in this discarnate state? How could... What ideas, words, or thoughts could be evoked that would allow me to impart the fact that I am a woman, because I'm not going to be able to show it to you personally, because this church only communicates discarnately. In other words, you can only come down and see me personally if you come and be on the air. Then you could see if I'm a woman or not. But if you're not going to come down, then you have to believe me through the air, but I'm willing to take a test. So figure out how to test me to prove whether I'm a woman or not. Because we've been charged with being a boys' club, and I've certainly been against that mandate since we began, because I am a woman. And that's why I have the power today, because I'm perfectly in tune to the electric environment, which is right hemisphere, and we all know the female archetype is right hemisphere. Okay, Mike, the number for calls are what, 595?
1478. Yeah, I think we should try to encapsulate.
Yeah, what did I talk about?
The focus, the theme for tonight.
Three themes. What was the
no,
first?
No, it's got to, we've got to bring it into one.
Oh, no, we don't, no, anybody can make the one they want. Let's pick a theme.
But the point is, even if we make a theme, people don't respond to it anyway. But
that's right, yeah. So say, what was the theme? Is Bob a woman? And should we talk about the Holy Offices? Is that important? Could we ever get to that point? And what was the other one? How do we have psychic ecology from solar government level? But to respond to immediate listener response, I have a letter here from David again. And he headlines this letter, Mixing and Matching with Bob, and he has in brackets, with a Gnostic bias. I accuse him of having a Gnostic bias 2 weeks ago. Now, he's listened to me for a few weeks, and he's figured out the propaganda, the jargon, and this is his response. He says, the divine logos is a limitless universal life energy current that encircles the planet and interpenetrates all life forms. The discovery and utilization of electricity, he has discovery in quotes, is this same life energy expressed with limitations. Quote, step down to meet material conditions by being relegated to wires. One thing about that is electricity doesn't travel through wires. That's the old visual metaphor of connections. Electricity is a relationship of resonance. All right, so I don't know if I would accept that statement, but anyways, he's making his point here. So we meet material conditions by being relegated to wires. That's what electricity does. For example, if you want to express music, you can have a more direct and human effect if the music is acoustic, free electricity, he calls it, rather than an impure, diluted, and deranged expression of the same musical idea. He asks, is the miming effect of electricity like a spiritual explosion in reverse? I left out a word there. Maybe I should just... rather than an impure, diluted, and deranged expression of the same musical idea electronically. His question is the miming effect of electricity like a spiritual explosion in reverse? And he goes on, my point is creativity and originality exist within the all-embracing life force. All recycled information and corporate media propaganda exists within the socio-political sphere of the electric environment. The divine logos supersedes the effect of electricity and offers a way for the mass cult man to find freedom for himself by tuning into the audible life force. This automatically turns off the express limitations of the electronic force in as much as you have a certain awareness of it and its effect on unknowing individuals, in brackets, the pinks. Basically, the ability to, or non-ability to line up with the force is relative for each person due to each person's relative placement of values, priorities, and attentions. Then he finishes off with a question, but maybe we'll get to that later. The first thing is, his question. The question is, if the imaginative faculty is not embedded in any sensory operation or technological extension, how does imagination change when it is used to express its imaginings electronically? Now, he's suggesting that I'm pointing up and celebrating an inferior environment. Yeah, he might be right, you know, Mike. And if he's right... then does this show end?
It only begins with
the Bob's
caller of the evening.
Bob's repentance. Well, wait a minute. Let me just address this. No, Dave, I'm going to explain that a little later. I can't admit that you're right. And I think I actually come up with some information to back up my my confidence that I should maintain a superior attitude here and explain why electricity is... really part of the original logos you're talking about. I think you're missing the point. The original logos is electromagnetic resonating energy. Let's go on to the caller.
Okay, go ahead, caller.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Bob.
Hello.
I wanted to ask you a couple of questions.
No statements to make?
Well, I have a statement in the questions, of course.
This isn't Dave, is it?
No.
Okay.
I wanted to ask one question concerning Marshall McLuhan's observation about the medium being the message.
Yeah.
My observation of that is that that means if you're holding an ice cream cone in your opposite hand, it tastes different.
If you're holding an ice cream cone in your opposite hand, it tastes different. Mike's laughing.
Is that not accurate?
No, that's... the medium for an ice cream cone is the mouth.
Pardon me?
The medium for the ice cream cone is the mouth.
Yes, but it's also... it also deals with atmospheres, doesn't it? And your left hand or your right hand are different atmospheres.
No. The atmosphere is the environment around you. That's just a puny part of the natural environment. So I would suggest it might taste differently if you were inside a movie theater or if you were watching television or if you were at Disneyland or if you were out in the Arizona desert. those would be different environments that would affect the taste mechanism, not your hand.
I disagree. I think that you're creating or you're using a different environment, a different inner environment when you're using your opposite hand. You're using the different part, tuning into a different part of your brain.
Yeah, but your brain is conditioned by the ensuing environment. That is a factor. Okay, I grant you that is a factor in relation to our natural brains, but the brain is changed by the environment. Right hemisphere electric environment will wake up the right hemisphere. A literate environment, a city 100 years ago, would wake up the left hemisphere, and that would alter your taste buds. So you're still missing the larger environment. I grant you that it does.
No, I'm not missing it. I'm just tuning into a certain observation that I've had. Of course, whatever environment you're in and whatever environment that's in and on has an effect as well. I mean, if you're in a movie theater with or without a Sony Walkman on, you know, I mean.
That changes you. Now, you are right in talking about the influence of your hands on your taste buds. We call that the user as content. And the user as content is a phenomenon, which Marshall explained in his book, Take Today, of the meaning or relationship of you to the larger total effects of all the environmental factors. So you're talking about your personal meaning influence via your personal...
I'm sorry, a streetcar just went by. I couldn't hear you.
What was the last word you heard? Do it again?
You were talking about his...
User as content, okay?
Yeah.
I was talking about user as content, and the meaning of that, which Marshall explains in the book Take Today, is the user as content provides his personal relationship to the medium, which is the meaning for that user in relation to the total environment of the medium. It's a personalizing of the total environmental effects. So when you talk about the effect of the hand on your brain, that is the user's content meaningful level of response, which is a factor in the total response, but it doesn't include the larger environmental, you know, environmental atmospheric factor around you. So I would say you're emphasizing the user's content, which I would say also this letter that from Dave is emphasizing. See, we have a tendency to still think that the human factor, the private personal body, has a big influence, but it doesn't under discarnate conditions. It only has influence as an art form. That's why the sensory lords of America, Esalen Institute in the 60s, and the human potential movement, human potential development movement that came up with it, was based on sensory awareness, because our senses, our personal private sensory life, was so obsolete that it became useful and worked as a means of enhancing our perception in a recreational pastime as pastime way. But the reason that happened was the electric environment made all our senses obsolete, so we were free to play with them. So when you're talking about your body and your hands, that's a personal part of your sensory apparatus. That is not what I'm focusing on here and emphasizing the discarnate effect. See, you know, people took reality very personally over the last 30 years. And you have the different swingings of the pendulum and user as content group-wise and culturally responding to the electronic effect and various cultural movements. But they come and go pretty fast because they are not the constitutive ground of electric discarnate hood, which affects all cultures in totality. All right, now I don't want to sound too big, but that's what I'm trying to get at. It's a big process. So do you see, to emphasize your hands is not what I'm talking about?
I see that that's not what you're talking about.
Yeah, good. That's what I'm trying to communicate. And that level I'm trying to match, then I'm not talking about anything on a personal level here. And it's good that we have callers who begin to talk on a personal level, because then we can clarify what we're not talking about. See, for you, it's meaningful that you switched your hands. For the ice cream cone, that's part of your conscious perception of what the environment's doing to you. But I urge you to look at the larger effects, and it would change. Your different parts of your brain would respond differently to each hand with a quality determined by the larger environment, wherever you were, a movie, restaurant, in a satellite, or in the desert.
Well, that is something that I understood through that observation of the switching of hands. I mean, it's I don't see it as a different thing. You know, I look at the larger environment and I see the same thing. I mean, it helped me tune into the larger environment.
By switching your hands, it helped you tune into the larger environment?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, that is the human cultural, personal flip response. We do it reverse. The electric environment triggers us to have an awareness of our own senses, but we think we have our sensory development initiated by our own will and notice the external environment. So it's a chicken and egg, which has the influence first kind of thing, right? So Marshall, when he said the medium is a massage, emphasized the external environment, especially targeting the Western audience, because the Western man, being literate up till recent times, didn't understand how the environment affected him directly. Remember, Marshall privately was a Catholic. A Roman Catholic, went to the Mass every day. That is something that surprised a lot of people who read his books but didn't know about that fact about him personally until after he died in 1980. That surprises people because they thought of him as maybe an anarchist or a utopian or a conservative, this or that. They never thought he was someone who devoted his life personally to the Roman Catholic faith. And he would privately say the Roman Catholic faith was enhanced by the electric environment for him, because the electric environment for him looked like the Antichrist. But he didn't emphasize that collectively, because that just gets into a negative disservice emphasis, and he wanted to get people to look at the environment first with a sense of no value judgments, so that you could see at least the ground you were in before you had your personal user's content meaningful response to it. So I can't argue that for you, your perceptual apparatus sees that your hands have a bigger influence in perceiving the environment than the environment itself, or knowledge of it. Right?
Well, I begin with my senses, yes.
Yeah, but your senses have been extended.
Pardon me?
Your senses have been extended. The electric environment is an extension of your interior faculties. See, your senses aren't just limited to your body now.
I don't really see that. I see that it is an experience of the senses, but it seems to be second-hand experience. It's more like an echo.
Okay, look at it this way. Echo is a good word. That's what Joyce and Finnegan's Wake, which is another holy office, he called the electric environment echo land. But look at it this way. When you're on the phone, let's say you have ESP, and you can communicate with your brother in Vancouver, and you can do it anytime ESP. Now, with the electric environment, you could communicate with 100 people via intercom. You may not be able to communicate them to all of them with ESP, but maybe some of them, but you could communicate to all of them verbally through the electric intercom and get things done. So actually the electric environment is an extension beyond extrasensory perception.
Well, it's a different medium and a different message, though, right?
That's right. The medium, the message I'm saying it has is it's post-ESP. It's beyond ESP. That's why ESP would become popular now and become a natural thing for people to experience, because it's a rear-view mirror old response to a larger situation. When the larger situation appears and we can't stare that ugliness in the face, we then opt for rear-view mirror activity, which, in the view of evolution, usually stimulates in the tetrad level something that was dropped a long time ago. So we've brought back a passion for the occult in the 20th century because the electric environment predisposes that bias. That means we're having a renaissance in extrasensory activity right now, but it is content for the electric environment. That's the message of the medium of electric.
But I don't really see how you can say. I mean, if the medium is the message, if they are different messages, then how can you say that for instance, the telephone is beyond ESP? I mean, you could never have communicated what you communicate on the telephone through ESP and vice versa. I mean, what you are going to communicate through a ESP is an ESP message. I mean, there is no, you wouldn't be able to use a telephone for that message.
Right, but now think of it, since media are collective archetypes, think of how we apply that. You can have ESP and communicate in some form, but how does that translate into your external reality? With the electric environment, we can communicate with everybody, and it affects people and translates into activity. For example, inflation is caused by money moving at the speed of light. There's something concrete. The collective electric environment has created inflation. So ESP can be done, but maybe you could share thoughts, but how does it translate into an external reality that you work with? You know, how is it useful?
Well, it's very subtle. I mean, and you would have to be, you would really have to have ESP to understand how it's useful.
Well, I have ESP, and I have it all the time. And it's useful privately. But since Bob is a crowd, I'm a collective myth, and I'm talking about the holy offices who deal with the collective myth, that is the only thing to talk about collectively now. If you're going to get on the air, you have to talk about public issues. And I talk about the ground of the public and the grounds of many publics. So I'm talking about how to apply to that. For example, if the electric environment creates some kind of psychic stress, how do we have psychic ecology? That was my opening statement. Do you have it on a national or international or solar government basis? That is what's really affecting us. This is the cause of cancer and many diseases, and AIDS is the electric environment. It creates the ground for these things to happen. And that is how we have to learn to communicate on a collective level, not our private ESP. I mean, I am a great psychic personally, and I have people who can testify to that, but I don't bring it into this situation. I don't knock it, but it doesn't apply to this situation. It applies as content, like, for example, now we're talking about your concern about ESP versus the electric environment. That's the content for the environment, but the hidden ground here is that we're both discarnate right now. You're being broadcast all over the Toronto area. Your presence is there and being picked up and worked on by people, and you're also picking up their pressures, the electronic pressures, in your localized place, wherever you're calling from. That's something that Freud and Jung haven't talked about. You know, what are the effects of that? So part of the Church of Slack is to join as many cults as possible to show that we accept any personal reality that someone has. But we're not talking personal reality. You know what I mean?
Persona being... being mask, I mean, you're talking about taking off the mask. Right?
Good point. Now, yeah, I'm talking about the collective mask, taking off our collective masks. Our media and their environments they create are collective masks. And how do you expose and whistleblow those masks? One of the best ways was done by Finnegan's Wake. In other words, he took the book, and the reason people find it hard to read Finnegan's Wake is that they think they have to read the many linguistic contental references. When on a simple basis, all the Joyce did was take the book and mirror visually the radio environment of the 20s and 30s. In other words, if you go up and down the dial of a radio, which you could do in Paris when he wrote that in the 20s and 30s, you would have a collage of languages coming at you. So he put that collage on the page. He didn't mean you had to know what every particular phrase from different languages meant. He wanted to show you via a visual painting or tapestry the effect of the electric environment in creating a discarnate collective mishmash. He wanted to show that through the visual medium so you could have a perspective on it. That is one way to throw and reveal the mask of the electric environment. So yeah, I'm talking about the collective mass, the collective vortices of energy. Remember Wyndham Lewis, McLuhan's Big Influence, talked about the vortex. He had a group called the Vortices. So you're right. I'd be interested in why you brought up the mask, the point of the mask. Because I wouldn't have thought that you would say that at that point.
Well, it's the way I've learned to understand personality as opposed to what is behind it. I mean, personality is one's relationship to media.
Right. Now, personality is okay, but remember, cultures have personalities, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you say personality, that's private, personal mass, psychological mass, but I'm talking about collective mass.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still talking on a smaller level than I am. And not being derogatory, I'm just saying you're talking about people. Under electro environment, there is no human image the way we have traditionally understood it in old cultures. There really is no human image. which means we're going to have a renaissance of all forms of old cultures and their values as an anti-environment to the discarnate non-human situation we're in. Not that this non-human is antagonistic to us, but it is something new that we aren't prepared to cope with, I don't think. So I'm talking about the collective mass, and you used it and referred to a private mass, which is okay.
Well, what I've learned about the collective mass, I've learned to observing the collective mass within myself. I mean, there is, there is, in the microcosm, is the macrocosm.
Now, the microcosm, macrocosm is not what I'm talking about, because we've gone beyond that kind of dualism in the electric state. We actually have a situation where our normal understanding of God, he himself or she himself, is limited in dealing with the discarnate effect. So you're talking about, you've learned it from understanding yourself, but you're forgetting that yourself now includes the whole world. You contain whole multitudes yourself in the discarnate state. You contain whole cultures. That's what yourself is now.
No, but even otherwise, I contain whole cultures.
Yeah, originally?
In
before, well, on the level of soul or private citadel of consciousness, however far back that goes and however it manifested on cultures before we had speech or even ESP, yeah, that thing was involved and resonating with everything, all times. Now, I call that the private citadel of slack, and sometimes I'll mix that in, but I am trying to talk about something separate from that, something newer. In other words, I acknowledge, yeah, the private thing in yourself, but that is in the level of consciousness that is what I call the old nature. It's still here, but that was the God-given nature. So we were gods. Now we have created an environment, man has, that echoes that original God state. So it's confusing to relate our private awareness with our collective awareness, which is enhanced and confused among its extensions, meaning the collective awareness and mass are extended themselves. See?
Well, quite often when I talk to you, I don't really feel that we're on the same wavelength.
But that's only from the point of view of matching. It's okay that we aren't on the same wavelength, because there are lots of people who are responding in the gap. The gap is where the action is, and getting all kinds of ideas from what we're trying to do when we're attempting to mix and match. So it's okay. I mean, you've been offering your language and your vision to stimulate activity corporately here.
Mm.
I have a person right here who's been taking notes for 15 minutes based on what we're talking about. And doesn't matter that what he says doesn't match with what you or I mean. We are a catalyst here. We're doing media alchemy.
I think we should possibly move on. I know there's some other callers, so.
Okay, yeah, so a caller, we can keep attempting to match, but you will maintain your ground, I'll maintain mine, and we'll just keep slanging away.
Create a magnetic field.
Right, we'll resonate. There's no violence intended.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks, caller. Bye. I recognize that voice. I can't do the CBC, you know. Well, thank you, caller. Time to move on. It's nice when someone calls and.
I remember the voice for several
and
calls.
You two haven't quite connected, but which is okay.
But I like the way he keeps trying.
Yeah, when just listening to some of his comments, we should and going back to your original question or theme tonight, you know, what do people expect of Bob and what do they expect Bob to say? You might want to reiterate some of the points of the Church of the Subgenius and. You know, what the church has to offer, and ultimately what your goal is. People have said to me, is Bob's, goal, is it an evil goal or a good goal? What does Bob want? People often ask me that question.
So, in other words, I psychically knew that this was on. Mm-hmm. This is the accumulative effect of this program after 2 years, is what does Bob want? You know, Freud asks, what does woman want? Bob's a woman. What does Bob want?
You know, some people, we have heard the exes talk to us on the radio and have suggested perhaps that you are forming an alliance with aliens to overthrow humanity, and is this true?
No, I'm here to protect, and this is the correct dogma in the Book of the Subgenius that Reverend Stang put out. I am here to preserve the human dimension in relation to the Exus and their panic under discarnate electric conditions. They're only subsumed by the electric environment as we are, from way out in the outer levels of our solar system and beyond, that they're affected by, because all that solar system, that old nature, is subsumed in the electric environment. So they're panicking. They see us as users' content, the planet has a certain level of meaning for them, they're going to chew it up or react to it. So I'm here as a mediator between that and subgeniuses and pinks who can pretend they're subgeniuses enough to fool us and get on board. So that is just one form of psychoecology. That's more of a physical ecology. What I'm offering myself as the only person who's fully aware of the discarnate state and its implications, having studied the holy offices for years, that I am the one who's the proper candidate for that solar government position, which would bring in psychic ecology. I'm actually on a campaign here to affect ecological problems on all levels, not just the extraterrestrial problem. That's just one of them.
Okay. Of course, yeah, I touch upon that only because I think the X's can have the effect of exciting people.
Yes.
Know, the contact, the communication, also terrifying people. War of the Worlds is not that far in the past. And I just wanted to make sure that if you knew something about an attack on Earth by aliens, you would let us know first.
Oh, yeah. Well, I claim that they came in February 88, and that's why we quickly announced
As long as you give us some warning.
And, yeah, they're already here, and they've been on our show occasionally.
Yeah. Let's go to another caller then.
Yeah. I've got to clarify that. None of this affects me because I'm pseudo-exist. I am not the exist.
That's right.
Pseudo-exist, okay.
No. And we're just here. We're not here for a takeover. We're just looking for cheap rent, you understand?
That's right. I'm glad you caught me on that because I wanted to see if you would catch that. I did say you were the exist and you are not the exist.
No, no. Of course not. We are the pseudo-exist. We have nothing to do with the real exists.
That's right. But you are on a way of expressing what I'm talking about. That's why you're useful.
Thank you. It's always good to be of service discarnately.
Yeah, can you prove that I'm a woman?
Well, I can't prove that you're a man. Everybody knows that Bob's a woman. What is more fertile than Bob under electric conditions?
Oh, excellent. Mm-hmm. Yes, pregnant, every moment pregnant with meaning. Oh, you got your band there.
We understand. So, we're camping out. We're behind Pluto. There's a small moon.
Yeah?
Good reception.
It's a bit cold, but that's no problem.
Mm-hmm. And I see you're having some studio rehearsals there in the background?
No. We're picking up other broadcasts here.
Ah.
Of course, we operate by microwave around here, so we're picking up RF. Wait. Yeah, so we're discarnate here as well. And what you were talking about, it is a global theater, because we're having a hell of a time watching you guys.
Yeah, you can't find us a lot.
It's great.
In the media smokescreen, it's hard for you to find us, right?
Well, let's see. 88.1? Yes, we're on 88.1.
Yeah, that's close. But you're finding it hard to consider the content of our show in relation to the media actors. And the media actors are movie, TV, newspapers, print, handicrafts, art, law, legal, pollution, age, some...
Paper mache.
Any artifact.
That straightens that out.
Doesn't it seem ludicrous that we're concerned here at CKLN about raising the tower above a puny little bank, and there are people listening to us thousands of miles in the air. Mm-hmm.
Watching discarnately under electronic television conditions, this dome and this sky tower protecting Bay Street with the underground tunnels that will ferry them out when the first strike comes.
That's right. No need to ever leave, you know, the inner environment, always out, always within that environment, ever having to step outside.
Listen to Mike. Can you dig it? Mike's talking.
Thank you. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, Mike is explaining it.
It was my birthday last week. I'm a little older now.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
As pseudo-exes, do you agree with my scenario that the exes, the real ones, have already landed and we aren't going to have a first strike?
You're asking me to answer that?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
I can't talk about that. I've made a sort of a pact. I can't discuss anything about the real exists.
All right, okay. So then...
In 1998, maybe I'll open my mouth, but right now, I can't.
Well, what kind of comic book?
Yeah.
What kind of comic books do you like?
Just a second. Oh, are we back up?
Yeah.
Did the moon move? Okay, maybe. How about this? You know, let's talk about what I want to talk about. Let's take Zappa's book, Them or Us.
I think I've lost you here. I will.
Just when I was. See, they don't want to talk about what I want to talk about. I think he can hear us. He just doesn't want to talk about what I want to talk about.
No.
So I'm going to finish his statement. In Zappa's book, Them or Us, in brackets, the book, that's why his biography that just came out, autobiography a month or so ago, is titled in the first chapter. Book? What book? Because this book is just a political pamphlet. He's running for president, you know, in 92. His real book is the collection called Them or Us, the book, in brackets. And if you look on page 170, you see he's talking about Moon coming up to him in his home. And he's already written about Frank Zappa, the robot, as content in the book. But he refers to himself, the creator of the book, as Moon's dad. Moon's dad. What's Moon's dad? The sun. Maybe. So on page 170, you see Moon comes up with some content that Frank Zappa, the robot, has created in the book and deals with the creator, the discarnate mind. And on page 170, tells Moon what to do. And then Moon's dad writes out the rest of the scenario based on what he told Moon to do. That's an interesting expression of the interval between private creative discarnate state and the content. We have a new caller. Great.
No, wait. I'm back. We just suffered a direct hit from the skyline, from this tower of the CN. Well, just a second. There's a lot of water coming in here.
Three Mile Island.
They hit our bloody washroom. Just a second. Could you get a towel over here?
Okay.
I'm awfully sorry. One thing that interests me earlier tonight, it's the gentleman that called before.
You know who that is, don't you?
No, but I thought he'd never shut up. He was talking about his right hand and his left hand and the ice cream cone. He's missing the point. He has to think about how the ice cream cone feels, don't you think?
Yes.
Good point, Pseudo-X. Yes. The ice cream cone was overlooked in that conversation.
And that the ice cream could have ESP and conditioning the eater of the ice cream to interpret the ice cream a certain way.
And which side of the ice cream cone are you eating?
Oh, who's eating who?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, is the ice cream cone consuming the...
You. Because once it gets inside you, cancer.
Yeah, right.
It consumes you. Right. Good point.
So thanks for straightening that out. Okay. I thought that should have been brought up.
Good luck. Can we call a plumber for you or anything?
What's that?
Can we call a plumber for you? Or?
Oh, good. No, I think we've got it under control now.
Okay.
Well, you evoke a whole theme. I was reading Dr. Beter's transcript for the explanation of what happened to Three Mile Island 10 years ago, and, of course, there was a lot of leakage of radioactive water, and most of the events of my life each day resonate with events later in that day, and you evoke that right there. You got a direct hit there on your nuclear reactor, I assume. What caused that? Are you in a different time warp? Isn't there peace in my time?
Well, one interesting thing about... electronic conditions, and in fact any kind of space conditions, is the presence of tachyons and their properties of, because let's try and clarify this about tachyons. They do travel faster than the speed of light, so therefore they can go back in time. Now, I don't want to give it away, but think about directing a beam of this at a certain point, back to a certain time. You can attack the subconscious that way. It's like free advertising. That's how we've been getting all these people over in the other quadrant to consume a certain product, and it's worked.
In other words, that's amazing. That's time-based reality mutating for targeted reactions.
And for all time.
And corrections. Yeah. That's something that the electric environment, does it deal with that? How does the electric environment relate to that time-based natural phenomenon of all times happening at the same time and subject to mutation?
We can look at it this way. We all know that Bob is a crowd.
Yeah.
Bob is a crowd electronically, and all that implies, and for all times.
So it's the same thing, which goes back to the point, the original letter I wrote, is that this person is trying to distinguish, Dave is trying to distinguish and distinguish the original natural electric environment from the man-made one. They are interpenetratable and exchangeable.
That's right. He'll have to concentrate on the ice cream cone.
Yeah, because that would be what the whole message of Christ was, eh?
Christ was the ice cream cone then, yes.
Yeah, because he offered the point that we could become co-creators. And that's just not on a personal level. The environments we create can become co-creators with the original nature. That would make sense.
That would make sense. In fact, he visited us quite a while ago.
And through time travel?
Through time travel. Through tachyon.
What do you think of my show?
Oh, he likes your show. He sends his regards. He says hello to Mike.
No, he doesn't. Oh. No. Wait a minute. This is a problem here. I'm going to not match with you. He doesn't like my show. And I don't think you're picking up...
I was just testing you.
Yeah, okay. I just tested you.
I love this. I love this bluff.
Yeah.
Under electric conditions. Just a second. Hold on. Okay, we're back now. They hit us right in the washroom. Did I say that? Yes, I did.
I think we should let you get back to your leak and move on to other callers.
Listen, we welcome any calls from you again if we're a bit low on any incoming calls.
Yeah, well, we're going to go back, back east.
Yeah.
I'll call you in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And in the next few minutes if we need you.
Oh, we're always there for that.
Okay, thank you.
Good night.
So it's resonating. We're getting relevant comments and responses to what we're talking about. I think I should go into some hard good old time facts about recent murders. We like to be kind of an obituary column. That's the most important thing of time.
Stay on top.
Yeah, the most important thing in Time magazine is the milestones. You have to read them religiously.
Let's just reiterate, though, that we only have about 10 minutes left. And
two calls and 50 minutes. That's amazing.
They went on tonight, didn't they? And But my name is Michael Dyer. You're listening to CKLN 88.1 in Toronto with J.R. Bob Dobbs, the Church of the Subgenius Radio Hour. And anyways, let's get down to the obits tonight, Bob. Who died this past week?
Well, this is death since the Iran-Contra scandal began in 1980. In 1980 is when the operation was set up in October to rig the election to withhold.
So this is Club 22, or is it?
Yeah, Club 22 information, or Mae Brussels, which I, speaking of Mae Brussels, to talk to me about Mae Brussels, get the book October Surprise, dedicated to Mae Brussels at the world's biggest bookstore by Barbara Honegger. Mae Brussels is an important source of information, and this book, October Surprise, summarizes the effect of the Reagan election in 1980 over the past 8 years. Remember, the principle was that they didn't allow Carter to have the hostages released so that he could win the election in the end of October, 1st of November 1980. They made a deal with the Ayatollah, supposedly. According to Dr. Beter, this would have been the Rockefeller faction. The Rockefeller faction prevented the Bolsheviks winning with Carter by asking that the hostages not be released in October 1980 so that Carter would go down with a dead image. So as a result of that deal, there, of course, blood money, okay? Much money is made, much murder and mayhem, because man is obsolete, is as expendable as a dollar bill today, and suffers inflation, psychically and physically. So many people are dying today. But in relation to this course and this particular scam, the October Surprise, a dead person is the Ayatollah Mohammad Beheshti, who reportedly sent a personal representative, according to one source, Jalal al-Din Farzi, to the pre-election Paris meeting of October 19, 1980, with 1980 Reagan-Bush campaign manager William Casey, and according to some reports, also vice presidential candidate George Bush. Beheshti died in a bomb explosion at the Islamic Republic Party headquarters in Iran on June 28, 1981. It's a death a long time ago, but it relates to the problems. Because remember, according to Beter, the Bolsheviks were bashing it out with the Rockefellers in that first Reagan administration. And that's the Bolsheviks shot Reagan. And they were maybe killing some of the Rockefeller guys who set this up. So it's not directly obvious why some of these people would die. 595-1478, if you're tired of hearing this information, bring up another topic. Another person who died. This person, well, this is Sadegh Gotsbazadeh, the foreign minister of Iran at the time of the U.S. Embassy hostage crisis. According to the former U.S. chief of SAVAK, the Shah of Iran's secret police, a Republican loyalist, that's what this book calls it, it's the Rockefeller fact.
Sherman Skolnick, Citizens Committee to Clean Up the Courts, 9800 Oglesby. Some call it the Bloody Soybean War. At one time, there were three major soybean processors in the United States: Central Soya, Archer Daniels Midland, and Cargill. Then, in 1987, an Italian firm, Ferruzzi of Milan, bought Central Soya. Of course, the press fakers didn't mention that Ferruzzi is owned by the Vatican. The Pope's company began buying up soybean futures, more so with the drought of 88. Taking the other side of the deal was Cargill, closely linked to Archer Daniels. By the fall of 88, Archer Daniels began to worry about their side of the deal. They had an apparent scheme to stick it to the Pope. Archer Daniels supplied undercover operatives trained by them to the U.S. attorney in Chicago. The purpose was to infiltrate the soybean trading pit at the Chicago Board of Trade with provocateurs wired up with tape recorders. They were going to catch what traders already knew, that there is a way to add about a nickel a bushel to the price when trading starts in the morning. By comparison, however, it's a small scam. It all started to bubble and boil just as George Bush was inaugurated the new president. Now, was it legal for Archer Daniels, fronting for Cargill, to take over the U.S. Attorney's office here and use it as a club to try to beat down soybean trading? At the time, the chief federal prosecutor here was Anton R. Valukas, subject to blackmail of all kinds. He is a...